Good afternoon. Welcome to the Channel Final Bell on the Rural Radio Network. I'm Susan Littlefield. To say we have some market influence going on in this trade is just like the tip of the iceberg, shall we say. There is so much that is weighing in on what we see both from a grain and a livestock perspective. Of course, one of the bigger ones looming is the fact that tomorrow is March 28th. That's where we're going to start in our conversation today as Arlen Suderman joins us with StoneX. And I know that, Arlen, you and I have been talking for weeks about this upcoming report, and now it's here, and tomorrow could make for some interesting marketing trade.
Yeah, certainly could. This report is known for its surprises, especially in the quarterly stocks report in the corn numbers, but also sometimes in the acreage numbers as well. The acreage numbers that we got from the Outlook Forum in February were not based on surveys or anything. It was just economists working in their offices saying, you know, based on their analysis, what they thought acreage shifts would be. I felt like they went too far with those acreage shifts. I thought the direction was right. I felt like they went too far, but we'll see what the survey shows. The survey was conducted either side of March 1st, coming into probably the 10th or 12th of March as far as when they finished up. And we were starting to do some short covering by then in the market. That may have had a little bit of an effect. But overall, it'll get us a big good feel. And assuming we have somewhat close to normal weather between now and then, I anticipate that the May WASD crop report, which will have the first 24-25 marketing year balance sheets on it, will use the acreage numbers from this report. So this will set the tone, along with the trend yield that we saw from the Outlook Forum of 181 for corn and was, I believe, it was 52 for soybeans. That'll kind of set the tone on the supply side. So then we'll focus on weather, et cetera. But corn stocks are where we oftentimes get surprises sometimes in the soybean stocks as well. A lot of it comes down to how well did USDA do at estimating the actual size of last year's crop. The head of that Department of NAS tells me that that's the survey they have the greatest confidence in is in the actual size of the crop, although they very frequently do adjust it a year later in the September report when no one's paying attention.
So tomorrow, obviously, and you know, I've talked about this before as well, we just got to kind of reiterate, when this comes out at 11 o'clock, there's potentially that knee-jerk initial reaction. And then the human involvement in these numbers will start to weigh in as the 11 o'clock hour ticks on.
Absolutely right, because there is big dollars at stake with the algo computers trading the actual numbers when they come across. And you can see massive swings in price of 10, 15, 20 cents within the first few seconds as they read those numbers and the computers automatically put trades into place. But it's over the coming minutes that the human element starts to set in. Now, if you do significant chart damage, you can turn the chart signals and that'll affect the human element as well. But overall, we always say pay more attention to where the market closes on report day, because that'll give a bigger indication of the resolve on the market and how it may have changed based on these numbers.
All right. So let's look at the fact that you got some updated numbers when it comes to Brazil's crop production and what that means as well.
Yeah, AgriConsult is another consulting company in Brazil, and they just raised their Brazil soybean production estimate to 156.5 million metric tons. That is up 4.3 million metric tons from their February estimate. They did so partially because they increased the area, and you and I have talked before on this show about perhaps Brazil is increasing area planted of soybeans at a faster pace than previously believed. I did a little bit of quick math. They increased their area devoted to soybeans by about 1.5%. That's a little bit larger overall production estimate on that, so I'm assuming there's some yield adjustments as well. Haven't been able to look at all the details as this just came out as we began talking. We will be coming out with our customer survey, which looks at both area planted and yield on Monday. I'm anxious to see what those numbers are. That'll be for both soybeans and corn. But what this says is we are getting close to knowing the bottom of this crop. and the focus is quickly shifting on to the next year's production, U.S. Midwest, as well as next year's South American soybean production. We still are focused on Brazil's winter corn crop. That's over three-fourths of what they produce each year. As we look at that, they're getting good rains right now in that region. They're still below normal, but here in the last week, they've had some good rains. The forecast models have underperformed, shall we say. In other words, the rains have underperformed the models, is a better way of saying it. So it's not been up to normal levels, but it's been adequate to keep the crop and to buy some time. The question is, do we go drier from this point forward like we did in 2016 and like the weather models have been hinting? That's the big question mark. That'll make the difference as we go into pollination and early grain fill over the coming month. That's when you can get the big drops in yield or the big increases in yield. And that can have a big impact on our exports over the coming year.
So before we head to break, and if we need to continue, we can so, but with the Port of Baltimore, we've heard so much, and of course our thoughts and prayers to all those that have been impacted by it, but there's a fertilizer aspect that you talked about during yesterday's midday report.
Yeah, absolutely. Baltimore is the sixth largest port in the United States for handling fertilizer, 351,000 metric tons, mostly going to be urea ammonium nitrate, although there's a little potash and urea coming in there, but most of UAN coming from Russia.
All right. Well, folks, we'll talk more about this because we're running out of time. But when we come back, we'll continue talking about the Port of Baltimore, and then we'll take a look at what's happening on the livestock side as well. A lot of influences that are coming with the discussion of avian influenza and some dairy cattle across the United States. It's Channel Final Bell on the Rural Radio Network.
Joe Gangwish back with you for Channel Seed. Steve Bristol of Bristol Ag is our guest on this channel chat. Steve serves the central Nebraska area out of Ravenna. So, Steve, what's been the most rewarding part of being a Channel Seed pro?
You know, being able to solve problems for guys. Lots of times I have growers come to me with all kinds of issues that they face in their farm, and I utilize my local and practical trials and experience to create solutions that fit the individual farm needs.
What are the advantages of Channel and regional brands coming together?
You know, we have the best and most complete seed portfolio in the corn and soybean industry, and it just got better. No seed company has a hybrid built specifically for each field's individual demands other than Channel.
For more on what Channel can do for you, see Steve at Bristol Ag in Ravenna. You can also find Bristol Ag and Channel on Facebook or contact your local Channel seed professional in Nebraska, Kansas, Wyoming, or Colorado.
To move the ship out of the channel until they remove the bridge from, and they're not going to do any of that until they finish searching for the remaining six victims. So, as you said, our prayers are out for those families, but that means we're not going to be able to get the products moving through there for quite some time before they're able to clear those channels. The biggest agricultural, and it's the sixth largest coffee import place, same thing with sugar, I believe, in the United States for moving sugar through the port. Agricultural equipment, et cetera, yes. But as far as being something that's going to directly impact agriculture, probably the fertilizer story is the biggest. And I don't want to overstate it, though, either, except for that region of the country. This is where a lot of the UAN comes in from Russia to service the fertilizer needs of crop producers in that part of the country. Pretty much, I'm guessing, along that eastern seaboard there in the Mid-Atlantic area and maybe to the north. And April is the second largest import month, followed by with the leading being in August. And so we look at the last year's data, it was almost exclusively UAN coming in. And that's critical right now for timing, trying to get fertilizer in place for the crop, start of the crop growing season. And so what I anticipate that's going to do is start drawing fertilizer from the west via other routes and probably start to stress the supplies that we see in the eastern Midwest, trying to move it to the east to fill that void, perhaps starting to impact some acreage decisions. I've done some inquiries in that area, and nobody's willing to say that yet, but that's something we're going to be watching.
Definitely will have some longer-term effects as well. Switch gears a little bit. Well, wait, before we do that, I want to talk a little bit about what you're seeing with the stalemate going on in Wall Street.
Yeah, as we look at Wall Street, it's just kind of a stagnant day, I will say, today. And that's largely because the traders are being cautious with the PCE inflation data that the Fed holds up to be so important coming out on Friday, which is a holiday for the markets. As you know, the markets are closed on Friday for Good Friday holiday tied to Easter. And so the markets won't be able to trade any potential surprises in that data till Monday. So there's a caution out there. So we're seeing the stock market just kind of stagnate. We're seeing the grain and oilseed prices stagnate as well. Now, we did see a little more of a downward bias for corn and soybean prices. Some of that's because of the chart damage we did yesterday. Some of that's because of, and it's related, is the bird flu in dairy cattle that we saw in the southwestern plains, with the funds making, I think, overreacting perhaps to the fear that it's going to hurt demand, feed demand. You know, there's that direct impact, and then there's that secondary impact, and that is whether it actually hurts exports of beef. We don't anticipate that it should. From a science standpoint, it shouldn't. But sometimes countries will use something like this as an excuse to block imports. So far, we haven't heard any of that. So far, there's no indication that that's going to happen. So we did stabilize cattle prices a little bit today as a result, and even ended the day in positive territory after holding yesterday's lows, which was certainly good to see happen. But the corn and soybeans, we'd already done some chart damage, and basically there's that expectation that tomorrow's reports are going to confirm that we have adequate stocks with growing stocks above year-ago levels and enough acreage to keep it that way if we have normal weather going forward.
Definitely going to be some interesting times in this cattle market as you watch it. And, you know, I think there's probably some concerns as well from a beef perspective that if we have to cull some of these cows, that could put a strain on this beef market, because that's a lot of hamburger walking through those houses.
It is. And particularly in light of the fact that supply has exceeded expectations. In fact, if you look at the last couple of cattle on feed reports, it looks like now we're going to have levels that are of numbers of cattle, I should say, coming out of feedlots that are relatively close to last year's levels as we head into the summer. And that's at a time when we're importing a tremendous amount of beef as well, because we were anticipating that we would have shortages, so that really opened up the import market. So that combination is really kind of hurting our ability to kind of sustain the upward rally, even though we're still looking up there near $300 box beef prices.
All right, great conversation, Arlen, today. Best way for folks to get a hold of you?
StoneX.com or over on Twitter. My handle is Arlen, A-R-L-A-N. FF101.
And that has been today's Channel Final Bell. A quick reminder, commodity futures and options do involve a substantial risk of loss, not suitable to all investors. And that is the Channel Final Bell, brought to you by Channel Seed and your local Channel Seed professional on the Rural Radio Network.